The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Rank Squad, and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. Looking back at a wild week of Champions League action in the first leg of the quarterfinals. Four games, 18 goals between them, averaging 4.5 goals a game this week. It's been quite something watching the Champions League. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me, as ever, is our Champions League guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good. I mean, it all went to plan, really, and it's exactly what we were expecting from all four games. I got all four score predictions absolutely spot on. very, very, very straightforward round of football.
It was pretty wild, wasn't it, across the course of it all? And we're looking at four games: Arsenal 2, Bayern 2 at the Emirates, Real Madrid 3, Manchester City 3 at the Bernabeu, PSG 2, Barcelona 3 at the Parc des Princes, and Atleti 2, Dortmund 1 at the Wanda Metropolitano. Only really the Atleti game, I suppose, would you suggest has gone to script. And even there, Atleti were a little bit lucky to get away with things at the end, having dominated so early on. But we'll come on to that game. I think we start with PSG Barcelona. What do you reckon?
Definitely, mate. It is the story of the round.
So, three takeaways as ever. We'll start on Wednesday night, and then in part two, we'll look back at Tuesday's action, and we'll start at the Parc des Princes. My three takeaways for you, Dean. This is sort of an off-the-cuff one, but at one point in the second half here, Pedri and Warren Zaïre-Emery came off the bench at the same time. In 5 years' time, we might be looking at those two as the best two midfielders in the entire world. I think there's a relatively high chance that that happens, or at least two of the elite players in their positions in the entire world. There's going to be an iconic photo of the two of them coming on together in this game in the second half substitutes, which is a pretty cool thing. But I mean, the wider point and the takeaway here, I think, is that the substitutions from both managers were really, really good. And the in-game management that both displayed to turn things around and swing the momentum in their favour was very impressive. Obviously, Luis Enrique, pretty disappointed at halftime. He brought on Bradley Barcola, who's played quite a lot in this competition. And I thought Barcola was excellent, really direct, really dynamic, and helped to open up the space for PSG to hit back immediately and take the lead in very quick succession after they came back from the halftime break. But I think that swing of momentum was arrested and then swung back in the other favour by Xavi, who brought Pedri on. Pedri almost immediately puts through an absolutely glorious chip through ball that Rafinha taps home for the equaliser. And then he brings Andreas Christensen on. And actually, as much as Christensen obviously scores the winner with his first touch of the ball in this game, I think the more kind of notable thing was that Christensen gave some real depth and heart to the defensive elements of that midfield as this came into the end game and PSG were pushing for that equaliser. He got booked while doing so, which means that he's actually ruled out of next week's game. And on the commentary, Lucy Ward said that she was like, that's a really big blow for Barcelona. At first, I was like, well, he came on as a sub. You know, it, probably not that big a blow. But actually thinking about it, having a player of that calibre and of that mold, I think, to come on in those defensive midfield positions if you are leading to try and help see things out is a massive blow. And I think actually thinking back on it, Lucy Ward is pretty spot on with that one. But the kind of point I wanted to make was that the substitutions, I thought, really helped to swing this game in two different favours. And it was nice to see two managers proactively going at it and trying to change it. You know, Barcelona could have walked out of there at 2-1 down and been like, that's an okay job. You know, that's not a terrible result going back into a second leg at home, you know, against this PSG side with their history in this competition and the fact that there is this question mark over their capacity to actually go and get the job done. I think at 2-1 down, a lot of Barcelona fans would have gone, yeah, we'll take that. Let's get out of there, bring it back home next week. But they didn't, and Xavi didn't. And, you know, off the comments of the back of Luis Enrique saying that he was more of the Barca DNA and his teams play more like Barcelona than Xavi's do. You know, Xavi had his own back. And to be honest, I don't mind it as a comment. I don't think he's necessarily wrong. But there is something about this Barcelona side, since Xavi has basically said he's stepping down, the calls for him to remain have become ever louder. And his side have something about them. I saw a tweet, I can't remember who it's from, and I do apologize, that basically said that Xavi's Barcelona play a little bit like Galactico-era Real Madrid. And it stuck with me. And I don't think it's necessarily a full compliment, to be honest, because you look at that Galactico-era Real Madrid, and I think that the kind of wider perception of it is probably correctly that they underachieved a little bit. But in terms of what they're doing, this Barcelona side feel quite effective, quite efficient in what they're doing right now. And when they play in these spurts like they did tonight, they have almost anybody's number.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, justice for Rafinha. You just said he tapped home after Pedri's ball. It was an exquisite volley. It was exquisite.
I mean, I think I was so in love with the pass that I was actually like, I would have scored that. But actually, it's really, really hard.
It's actually brilliant outside of the foot volley.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
But yeah, I mean, as a manager, you have to take credit for these big moments. And when your substitutes come and swing a game in your direction, you've got to play up those magic moments. And that's what happened. And in the end, it's gone Barcelona's way. So yeah, it's Xavi that's going to take the compliments from it. And maybe he does end up staying, mate. I'm not going to rule it out at this stage. It's kind of a case of, okay, let's see, you start to imagine life without me, and let's take the pressure off me. Let's see how much this team actually loves me. And everyone's started to change the way that they act now. And we're getting the old Barca back.
Yeah, I mean, they were very good in parts tonight. Takes me on to number two, which is that PSG are weirdly bad at defending set pieces. And it finally told tonight with the third goal, where Andreas Christensen basically heads into an empty net. But the warning signs were there. There was a moment.
I blame the keeper for that one, by the way.
Well, yes. But there's a kind of moment in the first half where Donnarumma comes for a set piece and it ends up off Lewandowski's head and it's cleared off the line by Nuno Mendes. She's doing some good work in a defensive sense. He was pretty excellent, I thought, at both ends of the pitch today. But the sense that it was like, okay, that's uncomfortable. They took another couple of set pieces. There was a couple of shots in the box that were deflected wide or hit off someone. And the amount of opportunities that Barcelona were creating from these set pieces was, imagine, deeply uncomfortable if you're a Paris Saint-Germain fan. And eventually, as I say, it finally told with that Christensen moment. But this is the kind of thing that you just cannot have as a weakness if you are going to go deep into a competition with teams of this caliber. Because it's not just Barcelona here who are going to be good at set pieces. Every single team that you come up against from here until the end of the competition are going to have plans. And look, PSG going forward at set pieces, fine, no problem. And they clearly have plans of their own in a defensive sense to try and make these things work. But if you're thinking about how complicated and how evolved those routines can get these days, it felt like actually Barcelona had the most joy by just slinging them in. Because there was just chaos in the PSG box. And it did make me think, because I was looking at it and thinking, well, this is a problem tonight. It's going to potentially be a problem next time. And it's going to be a problem for any other games, even if you do get through this tie, which I don't think is an impossibility by any stretch of the imagination. Everybody is going to have plans to look at this. And so it just felt like something that kept coming back. And every time there was a set piece, there was this kind of collective around the stadium. It started to feed into it because it was like a worry. And you know what it gets like as a fan in those environments. If you look shaky at set pieces and the other team is building corner after corner after corner, that sense of dread just grows. it felt like that sense of dread was there in the PSG players from the moment the first corner wasn't dealt with.
That is interesting. I want to hear your number one, to be honest, before I say any more, because I haven't seen the game, but obviously got thoughts overall about how I feel about these teams. So go on to one first.
Well, my biggest takeaway is that Barcelona, when they click, are a really brilliant mix of youth and experience. I thought Pau Cubarsí tonight, again, was absolutely sensational. I thought he defended brilliantly, and I think he became the youngest defender ever to start in a Champions League knockout match. He was sensational, and his passing ability, his ability to fizz balls out of the back into dangerous situations, just remarkable. I thought Lamine Yamal was good without being brilliant. And then you kind of come to the other end of the spectrum. I thought Lewandowski was sensational as a hold-up man, as a focal point that allowed Barcelona to get out for a lot of the game. There was a spell at the start of the second half where PSG were pinning them in and in and in. But eventually they started to use that out ball again. I thought Rafinha was excellent. I thought Gundogan was sublime in the middle, just making things tick. And the whole way that things played along with him, just really, really brilliant. And when you kind of get that and you add to that the how good we know Pedri is at this point, Fermin came on and worked hard. And I think that it might end up being him that comes in next week alongside Pedri just to give that legs to the midfield. So it might end up being a slightly different shape, whether that's Pedri out on the left, as we saw from Xavi last year, or whether it just looks slightly different in the middle. I thought that just that mix that they have, where if these players are given the freedom to play, the Pau Cubarsí has been Barcelona's best centre-back for the last couple of games, right? The last couple of months, probably at this point, to give him and that confidence to be like, no, you've been brilliant. You're staying in this team. Lamine Yamal, I think, is already at that point that you kind of expect him to be in the side for all of these moments. But the blend of it worked really nicely tonight, I thought, and that you could see that element of being like, okay, if something's going wrong, we can give the ball to Gundogan, we can go long to Lewandowski, and we know they're going to give us that experience and that breathing space just to be able to work our way up the pitch when things are slightly going against us. I thought they were brilliant. And you know what? Shouts out to Sergio Roberto too, who took a yellow card and also will be ruled out of the second leg. But his energy and the way that he dropped in to help out Koundé at right back and Araujo in the middle there with the threat that Mbappe offered, I thought was a really important part of why Mbappe was so quiet tonight. So that mix and the way that Xavi has put that team together at this point, the way that they've started to find that efficacy, I think, of how things are working is really impressive.
Well, they're starting to act like Barcelona. And I think, you know, going into a fixture like this, they would have been made to remember that PSG do doubt themselves. They don't have a strong mentality, really, especially, well, not in this competition, right? You know that they can become frail. They're obviously a good team. This wasn't their best version of themselves. Like, you looked at the lineup and you were like, seen much better versions of PSG on paper than this one, but perhaps they can function. But you're Barcelona players, right? Don't forget that. And we deserve to be on this stage. It's almost 10 years now since Barcelona last won the Champions League. And that feels like a crime. And so for Xavi, particularly in a season when he's supposed to be leaving, to just remind players of who they are and who they're playing for, and to just like reflect themselves in a way that they would want to be seen, I feel like it's becoming more and more important. You've got Rafinha, who just clearly does not want to play anywhere. He wants to belong at Barcelona. He wants to make sure they don't sell him. And he keeps every now and then just cropping up with moments that really matter. He said tonight, you know, it's what a special night it is for him, and he doesn't want to go anywhere. You've got Frenkie de Jong, who should be a master of his position by now. And it hasn't gone brilliantly for him in the last couple of years, but these nights need to be a reminder. But then Pedri, like, he comes on in a moment like that, and within seconds almost, transforms the game, one of the greatest passes you'll ever see. Like, barely any footballer in the world could produce a pass like that. You've got Lewandowski leading the line. And then, as you say, like, balance that out with the youth of Lamine Yamal to the side of him. They've got something about in Barcelona this season, and it feels like they're on a mission to prove to everyone that they cannot ever be forgotten.
You know, Barcelona haven't lost a game since Xavi said he was stepping down. It's quite incredible. It's a good tactic. 12 match unbeaten.
Maybe Ten Hag should try this at Man United.
Yeah, it's 12 match unbeaten run since the 31st of January. Now, it hasn't all been perfect. There have been some, you know, some dropped points in that time. But it's a pretty good run. In that time, they've now beaten PSG, Atletico Madrid at the Wanda, which we've talked about in various, you know, moments. They've come through a tie against Napoli. It's been a good run of fixtures, and they just feel like they're starting to find a rhythm and a sense that they're like, okay, we can go out there and compete with teams. And it's not going to be enough this season, I don't think. There's too much between them in terms of the league, between them and Real Madrid. And I think that even still, this sense of Barcelona might come up short when it comes to the really elite teams in this competition. But I think they have found a sense of what they are again. And even if they were to lose this tie, which is possible, as I said before, I think there is a sense you're like, okay, there is a shape again about Barcelona. There is a nuance and an identity again against Barcelona that kind of went missing at the start of this season. And in turning that around, Xavi's done a wonderful job. So all credit.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. So you watched that game. I've seen brief highlights of it. I was watching Atletico Madrid against Borussia Dortmund, and this game should be dead. Atletico Madrid should have made the most of their dominance in the first half here. And they haven't. It ended 2-1. I'll do my first two takeaways before you jump in, and then I'll do my big takeaway at the end.
Cool.
So three, mate, this is how you set the tone of a game. I mean, Atleti were superb. They were hassling, harrying, harassing, pressing, annoying, right? Llorente was a pain in the backside. And I mean that in a positive way. Like, he really set the tone. On the first goal, it'll be talked about because of a defensive mistake in terms of giving the ball away from Matson and stuff. But the only reason they ended up in that situation in the first place was because Llorente forced them to play backwards. And then that led to the giveaway and DePaul scoring the opener in like the fourth minute. I was just really impressed. I know this isn't a new thing for Atleti, but the way that they're so front-footed and the way that they went about this one with such intensity, it was just so clear that they were like, let's get this done tonight. And as a result of their relentlessness in the early stages, like, Dortmund were just totally rattled, like, played with nervousness. They just couldn't keep the ball. They were running into each other, weird tackles, weird decisions. But it was because they were forced to play that way, because Atleti did not give them a second to think. And that takes me on to my second takeaway, which is that Dortmund just couldn't defend, man. They were rubbish in the first half, like genuinely useless. First goal, like playing out the back, yes, you know, it was made hard for them because of this pressing that I talk about. But honestly, like, if you want to see an example of how playing out the back goes wrong, watch that first goal. But Depaul took advantage of it. He was, because he was on the front foot, because he was trying to anticipate play like Diego Simeone wants him to, he saw that opportunity and he pounced. Dortmund just couldn't deal with that. And then deeper than that was the miscommunication, the lack of awareness, the poor positioning, all that combined really to lead to their second goal. It was schoolboy stuff. And at that point, 2-0 to Atletico Madrid. I'm thinking, like, they don't even look like a team that deserve to be in the Champions League, let alone a team that can come out of this stage of the competition. I know they've had a bad time domestically recently, but they haven't let in actually that many goals recently. One of the problems I have with Dortmund is they seem to ignore their opponent's style of play and just walk onto a pitch and think that they can just do what they want. And this is particularly the case, from my own experience. I don't watch every Dortmund game. When they play against pressing teams, it feels like they haven't really come up with a solution for it before it started, and they just deal with it in game and as it goes along. It's very strange. But yeah, to come out of this game alive honestly feels like a miracle if you were to go back and watch the first half hour of this game.
Yeah, I mean, I had both games on at the same time, and one of the things that struck me was that 1-0 up, Samuel Lino attempted a bicycle kick from the edge of the box. And I was like, wow, athletic.
But he was playing like he was like a 30-goal a season forward. Like he was just like, even the way he took his goal.
I mean, I know he's quite a flary player at the, you know, any given time, but you know, to attempt that in a quarterfinal of a Champions League,
yeah,
you know, a 1-0 up after 15 minutes, I was like, okay, mate. Like, wow, this Atleti team are really feeling themselves. And they had every right to be. I tweeted just saying old Dortmund after the first goal with hand in heads emoji. And it was, I got a reply from Dwarka Vamshi, and I thought it was an interesting one. He said, Kerbal's rep takes a hit every time he plays on the biggest stage. He does so well when no one's watching. And it did feel like one of those moments you're like, oh no, Kerbal's had a, you know, a really good season. He's been impressive for Dortmund throughout most of it. And it gets to this stage, all eyes on. And he does that. And he's like, oh, yeah, mate, don't do that.
He rectified it later because he made a good save that stops it from going to 3-0. So
100%.
He did do that because if it had gone 3-0, this game really was dead. But Dortmund have salvaged something. My main point from this game, it's not that serious, but my Griezmann grudge is over and my Jamie Bino Gittens love affair is stepping up a level. Let's start with Griezmann. This ran deep, mate. When we were at Bleacher Report, I hated him. I slated him every opportunity I got.
I know.
It was the making of a legend documentary that really rattled me, didn't it?
Really rubbed you up the wrong way, didn't it?
It really did. And obviously the move to Barcelona and just seemed to have an ego about him and I didn't like, and I just didn't rate him at the time. I don't think he's worth documentary, to be honest, especially one that's calling himself a legend. But the past is in the past and I've moved on, and fair play to him, he is absolutely brilliant. On goal two, Griezmann is the guy that forces it. It's Lino's goal. It's the goal I talk about in terms of miscommunication, because two Dortmund players literally run into each other.
Yeah.
But what had happened to force that moment is that Atleti have got a throw in. I can't remember who's throwing it, but he's looking to throw an option. And Griezmann just goes. He just charges forward. And so the thrower just sees it and just goes. And it forces Dortmund to backtrack a bit. It throws them off. They don't get the ball away. They get the ball, but they can't get it away. One quick pass, and it's into Griezmann on the edge of the box. And he pulls out this scoop pass, and it's finished ruthlessly by Lino. As I say, he's playing like a centre forward at this point. And it was just like, wow, like that pass is, there's not many people that can do that, especially in a moment like that. It was
Pedri in the other game.
Pedri, yeah, exactly. Like that's the level of play you're talking about, right? And it was amazing. And at that point, it looked honestly like Atleti were going to win this game 3 or 4-0. But it didn't work out. Sebastian Haller came on, did well, gave him a lifeline with a goal, kind of out of nowhere. But Jamie Bynoe-Gittens came on. And I like Bynoe-Gittens anyway. Like I like the way that he gets at people. I think he's still 19. And I'm waiting for him to really like break through on the scene. I know that, like, if you watch enough football, you know who he is. But if you're a casual watcher, I think you could have watched this game and been like, hey, who is he? Mate, he was all over the place, running with people. He almost scored an absolute worldie that hits the crossbar in the end just because it clips Azpilicueta's head. To be fair, Azpilicueta does stick his head in the way just about as well. So fair play to him for blocking.
He made a couple of really good blocks, actually, Azpilicueta.
Yeah. So, yeah, Bynoe-Gittens, I just think he's great. I don't know what happens with him. I really don't know where his career goes, but I just love watching this guy. And it was interesting to have him on the pitch, because what was happening is that Dortmund always looked to Sancho. Like, Adeyemi was on the pitch, but he might as well not have been, because whichever flank that Sancho was on, that was where Dortmund looked to exploit. They didn't trust Adeyemi, or they just really, really love Sancho and feel that he's the guy that's going to break things up.
I thought he was.
Once Bino Gittins came on, that was different.
I thought Sancho was good tonight, and actually one of his better games in a Dortmund shirt since he's come back. And it's nice to see.
He did well.
We were concerned about him, you know, just a few days ago in terms of
where he was fine. Yeah. And look, Dortmund was so much better second half. Completely turned around. Whatever was said at halftime, whatever was rectified, worked. I'll still be surprised if Atleti don't win this tie.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you this.
Yeah, it's just not as straightforward as it should have been. Like, Atleti should be going into that second leg, being possibly even able to rest players, but they can't now. And Dortmund will be feeling right. Get a goal ahead, and anything's possible. So yeah, a bit of a weird one.
Yeah, it was. It's just one of those ones where it felt early on like it could be an absolute massacre, right? And then, you know, it come away from that. And like you say, what Dortmund can also hang on to here is that Atleti have a really big game at the weekend. They play Girona. But, you know, we know how this table looks right now. They're currently in that fourth and final Champions League spot. Athletic Club 2 points behind them at this point. They play Villarreal, which isn't an easy game either. But, you know, Girona's still there, a couple of points in front of Atleti. They'll be looking to kick on and try and get that third spot where they feel like they at the very minimum belong in this league. And Athletic are chasing them and chasing them hard. So it does feel like now this is a difficult week where actually 20 minutes into this game, Simeone would have been thinking, maybe I'm able to get away with this and be able to rotate a little bit more. As you say, that is very much out of the question now, and they can't really rotate at the weekend either. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that one pays out. But it does feel like still is advantage Atleti, but I'd be surprised, as you are, just in terms of I can't see Dortmund keeping a clean sheet. And that in itself makes it tricky when you go the other way. All right, in part two, we're going to be going to Tuesday's action, talking about Arsenal against Bayern Munich and Manchester City, who went to Real Madrid. Don't go anywhere.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome back to Ranks FC and Champions League Takeaway, where it's time to talk Tuesday. And we'll start at the Emirates. Arsenal 2, Bayern 2. It was a bit of a wild game, to be honest, Dean, in so many different ways. Three takeaways, a start of three. And I want to get this out of the way, basically. A lot of chat around penalties. For me, they cancel each other out a bit. So there is one penalty appeal for Bayern where the referee blows his whistle, David Raya passes the ball from a goal kick, and Gabriel sort of stops it with his hand to take the goal kick himself. And it's one of those where, look, I can absolutely understand the Bayern frustration with this. And I totally, if it was me and it was my team, I would be screaming to the high heavens. So I'm not saying that they don't have a right to be angry about this. But there was a tweet today that compared it to the Johnny Bairstow stumping in the Ashes. And it reminded me of that because by the letter of the law, yes, it's a penalty. But I don't think he's trying to gain any significant advantage by doing this, right? There's no point here where Gabriel is trying to gain anything from this. He's not like, oh, cool, what I'll do here is try and cheat or try and... He thinks he's taking the goal kick. And for that reason alone, I think it would have been pretty brutal to give it. Because if, you know, when someone's trying to stop a ball or they use their body or they throw their hands out when they're trying to block something, you know, there is an advantage gained from what's going on. Arsenal don't gain anything from this. Like, nothing whatsoever. And so that, for me, whilst by the letter of the law, yes, it's a penalty and it's fair for Bayern to appeal it, I just think it would have felt wrong in many ways, spiritually wrong, perhaps.
I don't know. Just stupid. What's he doing? He got it wrong. He's made, you know, it's a massive error. And so, mate, trust me. If I'm playing in that game at any level, I am screaming for a pen. Absolutely screaming. And I'd expect it. The guy's picked up the ball. He's picked up. I mean, he should.
It's stupid.
He sent off.
Give you that.
He's picked up a ball. He's like, no, he's not trying to gain an advantage or anything. It's just ridiculous. And it's a penalty.
I would compare it to this, right? If the ball goes out for a throw-in, right? And the player goes to throw it. And when they do so, someone else is coming to take it. So they drop the ball from behind their head, right? But the other person then picks it up and walks off the pitch. Is that a handball and a red card? If they've dropped the ball from behind their head, but actually, you know, it's actually gone forward and onto the pitch, let's say.
It's handball, yeah.
The other person playing picks it up. Yeah, is 100%. It handball?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. They should be given.
I don't know.
This ain't park football, you know. It's Champions League. It's Gabriel. What's he doing?
It's common sense, though, isn't it, from the referee?
Common sense not to pick the ball up.
It's not common sense from Gabriel. Don't give me that. I'm not saying that. I think it's a bit of common sense from the referee. He's like, he's obviously not trying to.
He can't say what you said, mate. Like, to say to the comment, if he actually said that, Tuchel, after the game, said the referee told the Bayern players he couldn't give a penalty for such a horrible mistake. Mate, stop feeling sorry for people and worrying about their emotions. You've got a job to do. Stick to the letter of the law and give the penalty. Like, immediately after the game, all you're hearing is all the Arsenal fans crying about Saka and how he should be given a penalty for clattering into Neuer. No, that should actually been a booking for Saka for kicking a goalkeeper.
No.
And it's a penalty. It's a penalty.
The Saka one?
No, the Saka one is not a penalty in a million years. Geezer's got to stop doing this. Got to stop it. This ain't the first time.
I don't know, mate. I'm tempted to say this is a penalty.
It's fair play to him for try. Go he for it. If you want to try and win a pen. But he's hung his leg out there. He's pushed it straight into him.
Mm, okay. All right. Well, anyway, the penalties cancel each other out. As far as I'm concerned, that was going to be my first point. So I'm glad we've got that out of the way. My second point is that Leroy Sané is still an absolute game changer. And Bayern need him to be fit for this second leg. Now, he wobbled off, which is not ideal considering this second leg is in a week. I'd be very surprised if we see Leroy Sané at the weekend. I think Bayern have basically conceded the league title. Tuchel definitely has. I'd be very surprised if they risk him at the weekend because he was brilliant here. And the way that Bayern counterattacked was sensational. Look, Sané is not having a great season, and especially his recent form, where he's been heavily criticized for sort of having no confidence whatsoever. But I thought every time he got the ball here, he looked like something was going to happen. And you know, the first goal that Bayern score is his defense splitting pass that lays the ball to Goretzka, who puts Gnabry in. The second goal is just all Sané. It's like a Maradona-esque mazy run that ends up with him being fouled and Harry Kane scores the winner. But the way that Bayern played here, where they sat back a little bit, they were quite happy with Arsenal having the ball for long periods. But when they got it, they moved through the gears and Sané was so key to that. I thought that his ability to break through this Arsenal side and to put them in a sense of unease was truly pretty remarkable. I thought this was one of his, like, you know, those games you're like, yes, that's the Leroy Sané I know and love. That's the Leroy Sané I want to see every time I watch him. This was it. Yeah. And he was, you know, it's just, I think it's important just to remember maybe sometimes that even when he's going through bad spells of form, he has the capacity to tear teams apart when he gets going. And it takes me quite nicely on to point one, to be honest, because I think my first point here was that experience told. And the question, I suppose, that comes off the back of it is how quickly can Arsenal work that out? Because not just in terms of teams, but in terms of the way that the managers set these two teams up. I thought Tuchel, who's been in for a bit, you know, a lot of criticism of late, and rightly so, got this mostly right from a Bayern perspective. And the way that they sat back, the way that they countered, the way that the Bayern, you know, this Bayern team went away and played the smart moves. They didn't look at this and go, we're Bayern, we have to win 5-1 here. They are aware that they are not the same team that they were the last two times that these teams met. And I think that embracing that kind of underdog spirit and just being like, no, we are going to sit in here. We're going to make it difficult for Arsenal. We are going to frustrate this crowd. Now, they're not going to be able to do the same thing at home because their own crowd will get frustrated by it. But the way that they played this, I thought was smart. Now, the counter caveat, I suppose, to this is that I thought Arteta's substitutions were brilliant and that Tuchel's, even if they were slightly injury forced, actually put Bayern back on the back foot and didn't give them that ability to get out and actually break the game down. And that's what led to the Arsenal equaliser and to the fact that the end of the game became a bit of a whirlwind. But just on the whole, I thought that Bayern's experience was really, really important and that actually, you know, you kind of come to Arsenal here and this is, you know, the best defence in the Premier League in 2024. They looked a bit all over the place at times. And so, you know, this is obviously this Arsenal team in particular, this particular brand of Arsenal, their first time in this stage of the competition. It's Arsenal as a whole's first time at this stage in the competition for a long time. And you just sometimes come to these kind of games and you go, okay, Bayern are in a horrible run of form. They're in a bit of a rut. Arsenal are flying. They're having a brilliant season. You know, who are the favourites here? Sometimes it is just important to remember that Bayern have been here and done this, and this Bayern have been here and done this before. And they had the ability to be able to change things up. And it's something I think we'll probably talk about a little bit in the Real Madrid City game as well. That versatility of how they play, having spells of being like, okay, yeah, we can knock it around for a little bit. But other spells of being like, yeah, you have it. Don't worry about it. We're quite comfortable with you having the ball in front of us. That ability to turn games and to be able to do different things in knockout football is really important. And I thought that Bayern got it pretty much spot on here.
Yeah. My guess is that Arsenal go and do a job on him, kind of like they did to Man City recently. I'm expecting similar tactics to that. And I think they'll try and just see this into the late stages and hope that one of their breakaways leads to a single goal margin win that takes them through.
Dangerous, though, because obviously, you know,
it's dangerous.
We saw the Porto game.
They've shown that they've got that. I know, but they've shown that they can do it. And
I actually think that it's not how I'd play it if I was Arsenal. I'd go out there guns blazing, because I think that I don't think that Bayern can play this same way that they did here. Yeah, at their own stadium in front of their fans. Obviously, there was no Bayern fans there at the Emirates because of the fireworks debacle. I think if Bayern played like this in front of their own fans, everyone would be absolutely livid. And I think that
they do it most weeks.
I think they'd get on the team's back. So I think that, I don't think that's true. There's no weeks where you see in the Bundesliga where Bayern have had 25% possession.
Their fans getting on their backs.
Oh, yeah, but that's what I mean. But if you're Arsenal, you get out there, you get the ball, you keep the ball, you knock the ball around. And you make the fans start to be like, make mistakes.
The Allianz in the Champions League game, you can't. That's not going to happen. Not in a game when it's already level.
But when Bayern start to progress and they start to come out of that, they have made mistakes. We've seen that in recent weeks. We look at the Dortmund game in the Clásico, right? They make mistakes. They leave opportunities. They leave gaps that Arsenal feel like they're the kind of team that could genuinely take advantage of those. I don't think sitting in is the way to kind of draw that out.
Look, Arsenal have typically, we know from Arsenal this season, is they've learned lessons from the first time they've played against teams. They overcame Porto in the end. And if you think back, even against Liverpool, they lost to them in the FA Cup, and then they played them again, and they seemed like they'd learned from the first time around.
Yeah.
Look, I've had plenty of doubts about Arsenal across this season. And I'm not saying they're going to go to the Allianz and win, but I'm saying it wouldn't surprise me if they did actually go there and come out as the victors, because they've got something about them at the moment. And that's resilience as well as being able to ball out when they need to.
I think that, and this might sound silly, obviously, but normally I say that 1-0 down from an away first leg is about as even as a tie can get. which would suggest that Atleti Dortmund would be on paper the most even tie going into these second legs. But I think it's this. I think this has the is the obvious kind of there is so little bit separating these teams going into this second leg. And the way that the two different ways that this could play out, I can't call this. And that makes it, I think, maybe the most interesting of the four at this point.
Mm. Yeah, you might be right, actually. You might be right. There'll be a lot of double screening going on for the next round of games.
Well, indeed. Every night in this house.
I mean, I know you do it even if it's just an average championship night, but most people, this is the time to get the double screen up. It's going to be worth it. Was there anything else?
No, let's move on to the fourth and final game.
Yeah, Real Madrid 3, Manchester City 3. Ridiculous. I mean, talking about that Arsenal-City game, this was the complete opposite of that. I'll start at point three, and I'll talk about Rodrigo because he was really interesting to watch in this game, and he was Madrid's best attacker. It's nice to have a Madrid game where I'm not starting by talking about Vinicius Jr. or Bellingham like I normally do.
I'm really proud of him, man. Like, obviously, I put him third in those rankings the other day, and I got a bit of heat for it. And I was like, no, I love Rodrigo. I think he's
and
right.
I don't.
There. I called him on the right. He played most of his game on the left.
He played on the left, and that was really interesting about it. He was on the left, and he did a lot of damage. I think it wasn't just even the way, actually, that he went forward. He would track back too. He'd go for second balls and things like that. There was just something about Rodrigo in this game. But what I liked, the way he takes his goal, it was so cool. It was so cool. And I know it takes a deflection, but just the nonchalance. It was like a five-a-side finish when you quickly go on
flat.
You push through. I liked it a lot. And I underrate Rodrigo all the time. And
so does everyone, I think.
I rarely give him praise, and it's probably because of who he has to compete with every week and who he's playing with, but the guy deserves the credit this week, and it was a really, really strong performance from Rodrigo, and I had to start by giving him all the praise for that.
Some flowers for Rodrigo. It's lovely.
Absolutely,
to see.
Mate, absolutely. Equally over at Manchester City, Rodri, said last week on the main pod, obviously, this is going to be the guy on and off the pitch that feels like he's going to be so, so important. Yes, there's Haaland. Yes, there's De Bruyne. Yes, there's Foden. But there's Rodri. Rodri's unbeaten streak with City is now 66 games.
It's a joke, isn't it?
The last time they lost with Rodri in the team was 429 days ago when they lost 1-0 to Tottenham. It was on February the 5th, 2023. Pep Guardiola plays this guy every single time he is available. But Rodri came out after the game last night and basically said, "I'm shattered." And he did seem exhausted in this game, which is probably why he had to come out and say that, because he'd been directly asked about it. Now, managing Rodri through this run-in is going to be so important. It'll be interesting to see if he is rested against Luton at the weekend, because he definitely can't be rested for the second leg of this match against Real Madrid. Rodri's missed four games this season for Man City, and they lost all of them. Like, it's ridiculous how you can have the best team in the world and you take one man out of it and they're dead team. It's crazy. Going back to his influence in this game specifically, I saw a few stats in the Telegraph. They show his pass accuracy was actually even better than the 92.2% that he's had averaged across the rest of the season already. He misplaced nine of his passes against Real Madrid. Against Real Madrid on Tuesday, but he made 28 progressive carries, which is almost double the average that he's made across the rest of the season so far. And he made twice as many tackles in this game as he has done over the rest of the season. And yeah, he came out afterwards and said, I'm going to need a rest. Don't know when I'm going to get it, but I'm going to need a rest. He did look tired. City can't play without him. They got a Premier League title to go for. They got an FA Cup to go for, and they got a Champions League to go for. And Rodri's feeling the heat of it. And somehow they're going to have to, maybe it is Luton, because it's probably the easiest game on paper they're going to have. They're probably still going to have to come on at some point, just make sure they get through it.
It's mad. Wild, isn't it?
It's just mad.
Mad. But it is what it is. And there's a reason that he's the best in the world at what he does. He's redefined that role. He's just so crucial to everything that happens at City. And yeah, just what a player. Sometimes you'd have to just stop and doff your cap, I think, to someone like Rodri. It just feels like such a wonderful player to have in the middle, and another brilliant display from another brilliant footballer.
Yeah, look, this to end, mate. Number one, this is what a big clash between two great teams is supposed to look like in my eyes. Like, I don't want cagey affairs. I'm not interested in tactical chess matches, you know? I want an early mistake. I want an early goal. I want the game to open up. I want you to go at each other. Look, are either manager going to be happy with the lack of control and the goals they were conceded? No, they didn't want their game to end up 3-3. But I want great teams to provide great moments. And I'm 90% sure the second leg is not going to let us down in terms of entertainment. And it's great that Real Madrid need to go there and win. That's a positive thing that they haven't met. I have to admit, in the late stages of this game, I was convinced it was going to end up 4-3 Real Madrid. I was just waiting for that ball to hit the back of the net late on in this game. And they were under pressure a bit, City.
So often it does.
So often it does. And, you know, if it had happened, everyone just quit the Champions League, because Real Madrid they are the Champions League at that point. If that had gone 4-3 Madrid, just give up, Man City. Don't even bother anyone. This is their trophy. But look, when we think of this game, a couple of years' time, think back to it. Fortunately, it won't be the deflections or the mistakes that we remember. It'll be the magic of Foden and Valverde and the technician and the way that they have scored two sublime goals.
Yep.
Right. Foden's out as well.
But don't get Gvardiol out of this. What a goal that was.
Gvardiol, right.
The touch is not intentional.
He takes such a loose touch to then hit it with a shot like that. Fair play to follow it up with that. But I'm not putting it in the same class as Foden and Valverde, even though it's a great strike.
Yeah.
Roll on the second leg. Can't wait.
This is what Real Madrid do, though, right? Isn't it? Like, you look at these games, and no matter where Real Madrid are as a club, no matter how strong or weak they feel, they have the capacity and the nous, and Carlo Ancelotti, of course, but also the players in this iteration as well, to just make things happen out of nowhere. And they are so good at slowing down and speeding up games when they need to. They are so good at finding a point and finding those kind of quick fire moments that can turn games in their favor. They are masters, and Ancelotti is a master of this competition for a reason. He's a master of knockout football, because they have that sense of being like, it doesn't matter how far ahead you are, we can do you. And that's, the truth of the matter. And that's why this tie is interesting. City are so good at home. They're so brilliant. And they feel all-consuming at times. But if anybody can bring them down, it feels like it's Real Madrid. And that in itself lends this up for an absolutely spectacular second leg, I think.
Winner of this game wins the competition, mate. Winner of this game lifts the pot.
Mate, it's Xavi. They're not going to lose a game for the rest of the season. And that's how it's going to be. Barcelona, and then they're going to be begging him to take a new contract. And I don't know, he'll take the Liverpool job or something. Be out of nowhere. But all very exciting nonetheless. And a brilliant week of Champions League football, all wrapped up here on Ranks FC. So I think we are going to leave it there. So all's left for me to do. Say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been the Ranks FC Champions League Takeaway. Thank you so much for listening. Please do go on and listen to our main episode from this week, which was talking of the Liverpool manager, the next Liverpool manager, all about Ruben Amorim and if he is a good fit for that managerial spot at Liverpool. I'll give you a little teaser. I'm pretty hot on this one. We also finished it off with Dean writing a few songs for the Kop, which is a world first. Things that
I've had a couple of messages about that. I just checked my inbox before we came on Insta. A couple of listeners have written in, been, great song, mate. Loved it. I don't know if it was great, but it was quite funny.
It was lots of fun. We had a really good time. We did some serious, we did some silly. It was all covered, but it will get you up to speed on Amorim and how he would fit into this Liverpool setup if he was to get the job at Anfield. But with that, we'll say our goodbyes. Take it easy, Ranks Boys. Peace.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.